not mevarchin on bari mina mizonos. And
brachos.
The tour cars and dochen, you don't make a bari mina mizonos. But Tanya, didn't we learn? Hevila constantly emphasizes the words ikarapri, ikarapri, ikarapri. For something to get a bar of pri, it's not enough for it to be a pri. It's true, it's a pri, but it needs to have the status of an ikarapri. So tomorrow throws our question. Why is it that when it comes to tomorrow's he gets a bari priyadama in the Minei Ubei of the Gemara? Why does tomorrow's get a bari priyadama? I'll tell you why. Because tomorrow's, even though it's halachically a pri, that's not enough for bari priyates. To get a bari priyates, it needs to be considered an ikarah pri. So therefore, what could emerge is that on the one hand, vis-a-vis the halach of arla, we would say that what you get is a chiyuv of arla when it's a totsah of the tree. In contrast to the Ramban, the Toru Dime will hold that even if it's considered a pri, if it's not the ikara pri, then in such a case, it gets a bari pri adama. In other words, for brachos, you have this higher threshold. Now, could one say a big chiddush in the Torah's father? But Gershon wants to say a big chiddush in the Torah's father, the Rush. Says like this. What happens if you have something that's the Ikara Pri, but it hasn't reached the appropriate state of Meiser because it's still not edible? As is, as a fruit. And people juice it up and make it edible. So in Hilchas, Meiser never achieved the status of pri. But in Hilchas, Brachos, Meiser and Brachos are two different worlds. Meiser and Brachos are two different worlds. So when it comes to the halachos of Meiser, so then we would say that there isn't a chiyuv. Because we know Meiser has to reach a certain stage of maturation. But the Rush will answer the Ma'adana Yomtiv's Kasha, and this might set into motion the whole Shita of the Tur, might, that the Mechayiv of Bracha is Lav Dafka, always Tolui, in the Hagdara of Meiser. That it's possible to have something that's Potter from Meiser, but when it comes to Brachos, the Hagdara is not the pre, it's the ikar pre. Is this the primary product of the tree? And it is a big chiddush, though. Because what we're saying is, on the one hand, for Meiser, it didn't reach the maturation, but at the end of the day, it's the ikar pre. Once it's the ikar pre, so then in such a case, it gets a bari priya eitz. Rabosai, for those of you who know me, I wouldn't say this on my own. But this is absolutely fascinating ideas. A lot for the Talmidim to digest. To digest over Shabbos. This is, I admit, it's a tremendous chiddush over here, because what Rav Gershon is saying is that on the one hand, it's not a pri vis-a-vis Meiser, so therefore there isn't a chiyuv. But on the other hand, since you have the status of the ikara pri, then that's enough to be mechayiv. That's a big chiddush. But what are we bringing out now? That what are we setting up over here? What we're setting up is that we have these two different hagdaros. You have the hagdara of pri vis-a-vis the halachas of Meiser, and then you have the hagdara of ikara pri for bracha. And what's going on in the Gemara is, the Gemara is saying like this, is kafrisin at all, one way of reading the Gemara, is kafrisin at all considered a pri for Meisro, for Meisros? Is kafrisin at all considered a pri vis-a-vis arlo? So the wait a second, in Chutz La'aretz, he didn't act as if this was a pri at all. So how can you make a bar of pri eitz? How can you make a bar of pri eitz? If he wasn't knowing that it was a pri, so vis-a-vis the halachos of arla, so certainly, where you need just a shame pri, certainly it's not an ikara pri for bar of pri eitz. That's how the tour is going to learn the shaklavatari of the Gemara. So now, Rabosai, what we've done is we've solved the last two tzarachimas. We've solved how it could possibly be that when it comes to tomorrows, on the one hand, we could say that the bracha is going to be a bari pri adama, yet at the same time, the chiyuv is going to be a chiyuv of maestros. And yet, according to the Torah, because we've said that when it comes to the halacha of maestros, so the Torah is going to hold that what's the tamar? He's going to say that the tamar is considered already in the hadar of a pri, but at the same time, it doesn't reach the state of ikra pri. And what's going to emerge, and this is what Geshmak and learning Ketz and Mevarchim, is it's mamish replete. All over Hilchos Brachos, you see the Torah constantly ringing home this idea of ikra pri. Ikra pri, ikra pri. For example, Reish Bei Siv Katan Vav. Val tomorrow's Borah Pri Adama, Sheinam Ikra Pri. It's not the Ikra Pri, so therefore the Bracha is going to be a Borah Pri Adama. Exactly the Yisod that we've seen before. Vradim. Let's now go to Vradim. The Ra'ah coming from the Ramban learned what? The Ra'ah based on his Rebbe, the Ramban, or his Rebbe's Rebbe. No, I think the Ra'ah Takas learned for a while by the Ramban. The Ra'ah from the Ramban learned Vradim. This doesn't have Tzuras HaPri. Nothing to talk about. Of course there's not going to be a Chiyuv of Arla. Of course there's not going to be any Shaila about the Bracha, according to the Ra'ah and the Ramban. There's nothing to talk about. What's the Lashon of the Tur? The Lashon of the Tur is Yesh levarech al shel vradim bore pri adama she'einon ikra pri. The Torah l'shitaso holds that what comes out of the tree is considered a pri. But there's a new halacha when it comes to bore pri eitz. It's not enough for it to be the pri of the tree. It needs to be the ikra pri. It needs to be the ikra pri. By sugar, then that's an interesting question. Do you call sugar ikra pri or not? So I leave it to you to pound out the lashon of the Torah over there. But what merges, Rabbi says, is mamish this beautiful dichotomy, and this answers the two tzarachimas. The hardest part is to use this to be miyashid the Ravid. You want me to tell you what Gershon says? I'm not so happy with it. Or you want to leave it? You want to leave it over here? I think right now everything is beautiful. The Diyukim and the Ra'ah, the Shita, the Ramban. My passion tells me to try to do it with you, and the part of me that's the wiser part of me says to leave it the way it is. Okay, so I'm going to try to follow the wiser side. There, Rav Gershon goes on, and based on this Mahalach, tries to be Miyashiv the Ravid. I'm not convinced that the Mahalach is 100% correct. But what emerges now is what we've set up is that Lav Davka is the Gemara saying that whatever is Chayiv in Meiser, by definition, is going to get a Borei Pri Eitz. That's Lav Davka, what the Gemara is saying. What the Gemara is saying is that there are times that whatever is a pri is going to get a bar pri, and at times not. And the Gemara in the Havamina assumes that Kafrisin is going to be chayiv and maestros. If it's chayiv and maestros, it will get a bar pri. If it's potter and maestros, then it wouldn't. And the Gemara asks, the Kafrisin lav pri. The Gemara says, wait a second, how can you throw it out? If in the halachos of Arla, it's not a pri, then certainly you're not going to get a bar pri. That's fine. But according to the Ravid, what you have to do is you have to, along this Mahalach, you have to review. Okay, so Rabosai, what we'll do is we'll stop here with this Mahalach. On Shabbos, you can look up and see how he learns up the sugya. Yes, Yaakov, you had a... Oh, the few announcements after Yaakov's question. Yeah, oh, you want to go on? What?
Shabbos is out there.
What's that?
Shabbos is out there.
But I'm not happy with the Yishuv.
Well, if you're a bad Yishuv.
So if you... Okay, so let's go. All right. According to the Ravid, maybe the Gemara is going like this. The best thing for me to do is to read it in his words. It's hard for me to say over because I'm not. I find this a little bit too schwer. But let's read over the words of the Gemara. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. Slav shel arla b'chutz laaretz zarek yasev yonos v'ofel sakrifisim. So why is it that you're zorik the kafisa? Why was it? So there are two ways. He introduces that there are two ways to understand it. You could understand that the reason why zorik is the kafisa is because it's not a pri. That's one way of understanding it. Simply because of the fact that it's not a pri, so then you're zorik the kafrisin. Then, that's the way most understand the Gemara. Then the Gemara is saying it's not even a pre. Not only is it not ikur a pre, it's not even a pre. So the Gemara says, how do you get a bar of pre eitz? That's a simple way of reading the Gemara. That's how with our lumdus, that's how the Torah read the Gemara. But he claims that there's another issue that's at play as well. And that is whether kafrisin is considered an ochel entirely. It could very well be that there's another halacha that's at play for Meiser. In other words, we've been brainwashed by the Ramban and the Imei that the whole discussion is whether it's a pre or whether it's not a pre. He claims that there's another angle over here that could be at play. What's that other angle that's at play? And that is that you could have something that's a pre, but it's not considered an ochel vis-a-vis Meisros. You remember we had this idea before? We had the idea that it's possible from the Rush, when it was Rav Gershon Mechadish right before, it's possible to have something that's not mature as a almond, which is pater from Meiser, but it's still the Iker Pri. What happens if you have something that we don't look at it as an Ochel? He claims you could have something that you don't look at as an ochel because it's only the kafris, it's only the shell, and therefore it's going to be pater from Eiser. So the Gemara asks like this. The Gemara says, are you going to say, the Gemara reads like this, are you going to say, de avionos privi kafrisin la piri? Are you going to say that kafrisin is not considered a pri? Vis-a-vis what? Vis-a-vis its identity as an ochel? Or a minu? The halacha is that you make a bari priya eitz on the kafrisin. So certainly it's an ochel. Answers the Gemara, hu damar kribi akiva. The halacha is that you get a bari priya eitz. Not the way anybody reads the Gemara. Really, you get a bar of pre-aids. However, Rabbi Akiva was mechadish, even those things that have the identity of a pre, because for sure, the tomorrows, there's a lot of room to say that it's still considered a pre, but Rabbi Akiva's mechadish in the halachos of maestros, that the only thing that's considered an ochel is the avionos themselves. The kafrisin and the tomorrows are not even considered an ochel. So according to him, the Shakla Vitari goes like this. The Gemara starts out, and the Gemara assumes that ochel and brach are the same thing. And the Gemara says that even though it is a pri, it's not a halach, it's not considered a food vis-a-vis maisos. Now what I'm showing you is this only starts with Reb Gershon's Tzvei Dinim that he had said before, that you could differentiate between Meiser and that's what he had shown, that really, even though we were brainwashed, that Meiser and Borei Priya Eitz are the same thing, no. There are many, many Rishonim Mechalik. The Torah is also Mechalik. And therefore, the Shakla, the Tari, the Gemara is like this. In the Hava, meaning the Gemara assumes Meiser or Eitz.
No Maaser, no Eitz. So the Gemara says, are you going to say Kafris is not a Pri? Eitz gets a Borah Pri Eitz. So the Gemara says, no, it's a Pri. But it's not an Ochel, therefore it's not Chayav Maaser. It's a big chiddush. It's a sharp yishuv. It's definitely there's a reason why he's a big man. I have a little bit of a problem with it is structurally, because the Ravid, this is going to get confusing, but for those of you who could hold on to this, the Ravid himself, what was the Ravid's opinion about Vradin? The Ravid's opinion was that Vradim is not considered a pre vis-a-vis Arla, right? So the Ravid is not working on the team of the tour and the rush. And his whole mahalach seems to be closer to be Masbir the Ravid according to the other team, unless you could try to be Miyashiv. Maybe there's room to be Miyashiv. What bothers me more fundamentally is this whole chidush to say that something's not called an ochel, but still, it's still considered bar priates is a big chiddush. He has rayas to this idea. He claims that the Rambam in Trumas has such a yisod that needs to reach a certain stage of ochel to be chayav and maisus, but still not bar priates. But it's counterintuitive. On the other hand, we ourselves, in buying into half of what we have said, already fell into his trap. If we accept the pshat by shkedim hamarim. If that's the pshat by shkedim amarim, that's not chayiv and maestros, so it's not considered an ochel, but still the ikar apri, then you're buying into it. But there it's less of, I think I could buy half of it and then in the ravid. But the point is, what's emerges though, I just want to summarize this on this shtikul Torah, what emerges from this, I want to hear Shmuel what you have to say. What emerges from this is that, you know, sometimes when you begin to have a bigger dimension of shas, then you see that some of the hanachas that the Gemara makes aren't always consistent, or what your hanachas of how to read the Gemara are not consistent in the Rishonim. So like when it comes to the split between Arlov Tomorrow's versus the Ra'az, Shita Tomorrow's, that really, really is begging certain questions about what's the relationship between Bracha. Tomorrow's is Chayiv and Arlov. So if Tomorrow's is Chayiv and Arlov according to the Tur, so then you need to explain that Arlov and Bar Priyates don't always go together. That's what emerges. Hence, the Torah's father could come up with a very interesting shita, Shkedim Amarim, which, interestingly, is Halacha L'maisa. That's what we did in Halacha Shir. That if you have Shkedim that are not edible, it's not the Inchi Adai to the Hagli, that's what emerges. The most fundamental thing that I want you to come away with is not the Shtikl Torah. The most fundamental thing that I want you to come away with is the basic question of This I think is 100% mukhrach in what Rav Gershon is saying. These beautiful diyukim in the lashon of the tour, and that is there a chiluk between pri and ikara pri? That the tour is mechalek, it'll call something a pri, but not ikara pri. That's a fascinating idea to come away with the notion that for bari pri eitz according to the tour you need ikara pri. Then you have this whole shtikl Torah that the Ramban never gets involved with all of it. Because according to the Ramban, Tomorrow's is just the Yerek, and Arla, presumably according to the Ramban, would be made, there's no Chiyuv of Arla on Tomorrow's. Of course there isn't. There isn't going to be according to the Ramban. So you don't get into this Chiyuv. So then you have a whole Shtikl Torah. The Ramban is a totally different world. And then you can connect it to Vradim and so on. But what's black on white, sometimes you have to differentiate between the Chiddush and what you learned that's black on white. What's black on white is that the Tur holds that there is a Pri that's Chayiv in Arla, and he holds for brachos the halachos are slightly different. How do you read the Gemara? The Gemara reads as a kal v'chomer. If kafrisin is patur from arla, then kal v'chomer it shouldn't get a bar priyates. That's the Gemara's kasha. But not to say that they're the same. And once you see the kink in that armor, so then there's room to go in lots of different directions. And maybe then you have a yishuv to the ravid. In other words, the Gemara is not making an absolute hashva. So it comes back also to really, really reading the Gemara. You have to be very intense to read this Gemara well, to notice all these things, but to notice that the hashva of the Gemara right away between Arla and Bracha is Lav Dafka. And the Tur holds is Lav Dafka. And the Ravid's going to have to hold that it's Lav Dafka.
Okay, that's what Bezer Hashem emerges. Shmuel, you want to say something, and then I want to give the schedule?
Fine.
Afterwards? Okay. Rabosa, just Bezer Hashem for the schedule. First of all, everyone, I'm sure different people have...
Seven.
First of all, my name is Binyamin Qualwasser. I'm a co-founder of the yeshiva here, Mashkiach Ruchani. And welcome. It's a tremendous thing to have you guys learning. It's you've been keeping the Beis Medrash nice and moving. That's the way it should be. So, Shkoach. It's a tremendous thing in the summer months to continue Hasmada. Really, Gan Eden. So, major yeshar koach, and continued hatzlacha and bracha b'chol maaseh adacha. Rav Eisenstein asked me to say a few words, share a few ideas with you. I will try. Matos maaseh is loaded, and I do have a message indeed with what to share with you. And however much we cover, we cover. We'll start with B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad. Basically, the Jewish people are ready to cross into Eretz Yisrael. And two of the tribes sheepishly approach Moshe. And they say, you know, Moshe, we have a lot of cattle. This land's got great grazelands. And then there's a pause in the Chumash. Haaretz sheyikol Hashem lefnei yadas Yisrael eretz miknei. This is a great grazeland. V'lavadecha miknei. You know, we have a lot of cattle. There's a pause. Someone hits enter over there. Presumably they were hoping the hint would be self-evident. However, the next line is vayomru, they said. And you need that because even though they were the ones talking, I guess their first message was not sufficient. Okay, I guess you want us to spell it out. What we're asking for is the land. At this point, Moshe is rather upset with B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad. Moshe Rabbeinu has two problems with what they asked for. Anyone know what may have been the problems with their request? You are?
What?
You are?
Matthew Weiser.
From?
Los Angeles.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
I think they asked first about the taking care of the animals before their family.
They wanted to take care of the animals before the family. As a matter of fact, there's a very funny thing that Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately makes a deal with them that they can stay as long as they fight in the front lines. But the first thing they have to do is build cities for their cattle and their children. So apparently dealing with the cattle is not such a crazy concept. And ultimately, they agree. As long as you take care of the cattle first, that's okay. But then come fight in the front lines.
The Meraglim were the ones who kept them out of the land for not wanting to go into the land for 40 years.
So did they not want to go into the land?
So they themselves didn't want to go into the land. They didn't prevent the rest of the Israel from going into the land.
So this is a major issue. It does not state anywhere Moshe's claims as being that they did not want to go into the land. Moshe does equate them with the sin of their fathers, presumably being that of the Meraglim. But he does not say, how could it be you don't want to go into the land of Israel? He doesn't say that. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh suggests that maybe that was an area that they were expecting to get. It's a little bit difficult to understand. Generally speaking, there are certain boundaries of the land of Israel. Once you conquer the entirety of those boundaries, That's called Eretz Yisrael, and anything you conquer in addition to those boundaries is now called an annex in addition to Eretz Yisrael. If you conquer any of those additional lands before you conquer the entirety of lands within the boundaries, then it's called kibush. Yachid v'lav shemei kibush. It does not have a shame Eretz Yisrael. It's not called Eretz Yisrael. So the Or HaChaim asks, I don't understand, how is it that they could want to stay on the other side and Moshe Rabbeinu never attacks them? Wait, you want to stay in Chutz Lartz? Are you kidding? That's not one of his two attacks. We'll read inside what his two attacks are, but that's not one of them. You want to stay in Chutz Lartz? Are you crazy? So the Or HaChaim suggests the wording, Asher Ha'aretz Asher Hikah Hashem Lifnei Adas Yisrael, that Hikah Hashem must mean that it was really such a nace, the way we conquered the areas in front of Eretz Yisrael, these areas on the other side of the Yarden, and it was miraculous enough, it was Hashem's way of saying they have Kedushas Haaretz, or they're part of Eretz Yisrael, even though they're being conquered prior to the rest of Eretz Yisrael. So essentially, they wanted Eretz Yisrael. They wanted their chelek. They already figured out our chalak is probably going to be there. This is grazed land and we have a lot of grazing needs. So we're going to be over there. So just give, what, now that we conquer this, right? The guy that, the tribe that's supposed to get a lot. Once you conquer a lot, okay, we'll stay put over here in a lot. And the rest of you keep going. Live on this side of the Yarden, this is our land. So this we figured out is our chelek. We'll stay here and you go weiter. Moshe Rabbeinu's tainas are twofold. Number one, I'll read it inside so you know, not pulling any tricks out of a hat. It's right here in Chumash. Vayomer Moshe l'bnei Gad v'bnei Reuven. Ha'achreichem yavo l'milchama v'atem teishvu po. Number one, is it plausible that your brethren, your brothers are going to go fight in battle and you'll be settling here? Lack of concern for your brothers who are at war. How could it be that they're fighting and you're not? Number two, v'lama tiniyun et lev b'nei Yisrael me'avor ta'aretz. How could it be that you're going to sway the hearts of Am Yisrael from wanting to cross the Jordan, from entering the land? I have no problem. You want to live here? That's fine. Does he have a problem with them living in Chutz Lartz? Presumably it's not Chutz Lartz. That's what a number of Mefarshim point out. What is the problem? You're going to cause what's called a rate of attrition. A certain loss of interest. People are going to start dropping off in their desire to go and conquer. You've chickened out and stayed here. Let's say it is called Eretz Yisrael. But you stayed on this side, and you're not going to cross into the land, even if it's your right and your chelek to stay here. What about the rest of Am Yisrael? We're going to go weiter, leave this point alone, then we'll come back to it. A little bit later in Parshas Maaseh, we find an interesting concept. The Levim do not get land. We are told that the Levim get something else entirely. What is it that they get? Cities. How many cities? 42 plus 6. Excellent. 42 cities plus another 6 are a miklat. That sounds like a lot of land to me. So what's the explanation? It's not part. They don't have any land attributed to their shevet. It's simply allocated from lands of other shvatim. So every Shevet gives up certain areas, and those are now the Levium areas, as cities, as opposed to land. So, okay, so it's part of the other Shvatim, and Levium live there. So that's the Levium's. The Torah is saying that area, and that area, and that area, and there. That's the Levium. So that's the Levium. What's the difference? They don't have any land. They just have 48 cities. Okay, that's quite a bit of property. What's the pshat? One other idea, lastly, is at the very end of the parsha, Parshas Maaseh, we find the Rotzeach B'Shogeg. Someone that kills by accident, what happens to him? He goes to an Ir Miklat, the city of refuge. When he's there, no one's allowed to kill him. The Goel Adam is allowed to kill him, is not allowed if he's in the Ir Miklat. He runs away over there. Fascinating concept. A whole perek is devoted to the Ir Miklat. And what's the terminology used for this man who killed by accident? The Torah refers to him as a rotzeach numerous times. He's a murderer. And one of the more startling quotes, psukim, b'lo sachnifu es haaretz. Don't play around with the land. Asher atem bo, the land that you're in it, ki adam hu yachanif es haaretz. The dam. That really plays to the heart of the land. The blood that was spilled. V'l'aretz lo yechupar l'adam asher shupach ba. Ki im b'dam shofcho. The only one that the land could get retribution for is from the man who killed the innocent. Excuse me. V'l'aretz lo yechupar. There will be no atonement available unless we get the death of the guy who killed. We're talking about it was an accident. It was a Ratzach Peshoge. Why are you calling him a murderer? And that the land's never going to forget. And it's going to get its revenge. Calm down. It was an accident. Fortunately, I saw an accident in front of my eyes. Right here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, one of the tragedies in Ramat Beit Shemesh in the early days. And on Shavasar B'Tamuz, there was Slichos and the Kehila and the Yeshiva, is like in all the Kehilos in the world. And in Eretz Yisrael, specifically in Ramat Beit Shemesh and a number of other communities worldwide, there's an additional slicha that one can say. So in most kehilos, if one can say a slicha, the members are usually hoping, I hope that's not me. We don't have to be some kehilos. We're the other some kehilos. So we are the some kehilos. That we say that perek, that kina. And I explained, because those that lived in Ramat Beit Shemesh 10, 11 years ago remember how it was a terrible, terrible year. And in 1 year we lost 7 children. It was the first few years of Ramat Beit Shemesh's history. 14 years ago, this mountain, the whole thing looked like the one you look out, totally desolate. And over 3 years they built up the whole place. They built a city. And 2 years into that city, 7 children were killed in 1 year. A terrible, terrible devastation. One of them, what happened to have been right in front of my eyes. It was coming down a main street called Ayalon. I was behind a car who was speeding. And a ball went across the street. She was playing in the park. Ran across the street. And unfortunately, she was killed. She was hit by this car right in front of me. It was one of the scariest sights to see. And there were 6 other tragedies. This additional kina and slichos is about essentially tshuva, that our children should be well. Ribbono Shalom, keep our children well. Don't take them. Everybody in Ramat Beit Shemesh says that slicha. Those that weren't here in those first years may not know the makor why. And that's why. It shook up the community. Lo'olam vayd. I saw the guy get out. The terror that was of his life. It was an accident. He's a murderer? It's very, very heavy. Why are you calling him a murderer? Lastly, along these lines, in the world of Ir Miklat, there's another difficulty that the Gemara raises. The Gemara says, Reuven, Gad, and later on, Chatzi Shevet Menashe, they joined on. So 2.5 tribes, they get how many Ari Miklat? 3. 3 on their side of the Yarden. And how many on the other side of the Yarden? Another 3. 3 here and 3 there. The math doesn't add up. 2.5 tribes get 3 Ari Miklat, and another 9.5 tribes get 3 Ari Miklat. If it's sufficient for 9.5 tribes to get 3 Ari Miklat, then why do you need 3 Ari Miklat for 2.5 tribes? So the Gemara in Makos does not answer what I would have thought to be the Pshat. The Pshat is, make them equidistant, spread them over the country, the land, so that way if you kill somewhere, you have a fair chance of getting to the Ari Miklat before you get killed. A simple concept. And it doesn't matter if they're 2.5 or 9.5. If you could be dispersed anywhere, all the way up north, and the nearest thing is halfway down the country, it's not going to help you very much before you get killed. So what's the answer? Split them up. That's not what the Gemara says. What does the Gemara answer? Yeah, because the Ritzicha is Shechiach over there. The Ritzicha is Shechiach, the Rotzkin. There are a lot of murderers over there. As far as I'm aware, this was written when? The Torah? What are we talking? The Torah is giving us mitzvos. Where, when to put the Ari Miklat. 3 Ari Miklat on one side, 3 Ari Miklat on another side. Because the Rotzchim are Shchiach. When? What are you talking about? When are they going to be common? Now? Reuven and Gad start killing each other. So immediately, go, 3 Ari Miklat right over there. They killed each other on purpose. And if they're killing each other on purpose, so that's murder. That's not Ari Miklat doesn't help you. Put in 3 additional Ari Miklat for accidental murders. Because accidental murders, I'm going to tell you now, are going to be so common in the next century. Philip Plain. I'd like to suggest basically 2 approaches. Person, let's say, person drives. Imagine most of you drive. And let's say you go, decide to take a road trip. It's going to be one of those road trips in America, go to I-84 or I-90, and you're going to be going traveling straight for hours. So, the difference between 50 miles an hour and 90 miles an hour seems to be just academic. I mean, you don't even feel it. It's so smooth. It's so straight. It's not like Eretz Yisrael driving, where it feels like pole position constantly, every minute. It's like just enjoyable. Yeah. Have you noticed there's no cruise control as one of the options in the cars in Eretz Yisrael? In America, I go back, and like, there's this option. You put it on cruise control, and really, that's all you do. 4 or 5 hours, you just drive. And you're doing nothing. So you might as well cruise at 100, 110. What's the difference? Okay, they're cops. At some point, it hits you, hey, I probably should not be going this fast. Probably should. So there are 2 possible thoughts that go through your mind as to the justification why you will. Justification A is, I don't really care. And justification B is, I just feel I'm fully in control. I'm not endangering anybody. There is nobody else on this road. There's no danger here. I hear it. A person, a seasoned driver, who feels that he's fully in control of the car. He's not running anybody a risk. I hear it. I don't know if I suggest it, but I hear it. I wouldn't necessarily go up the concept, run up the concept of rotzeach. But a guy that speeds, when that thought pops in his head, he says, I don't care. He may have been a killer, a murderer, 3,000 times over. He just has no clue. In Shemayim, it's Ke'ilu, he has murdered. You don't care? And what happens if a kid runs into the street? I don't care. You don't care? Of course, when it happens, now he cares. Of course, when the police come, he cares. But when the thought is in his mind, and he says to himself, I don't care, he is a murderer. And the Ribbono Shel Olam in Shemayim very possibly judges him, you're a murderer. If that's the case, here's a man who basically is a murderer, he just didn't do it yet. And one day, the Ribbono Shel Olam orchestrates the events. Bingo, his day arrived. And he actually kills someone. Total accident. But maybe the concept that the Ribbono Shel Olam can bring a person to actually go through the trauma that he was the one involved in this accident, maybe it's because he wasn't careful enough in his ways beforehand. There's a Gemara, unbelievable Gemara also in Gemara Makos about the Kohanim. The Kohen Gadol's mother, I don't know why it's the mother, not his wife. He's got to be married if he's going to be considered the Kohen Gadol. But everybody that's in the Ir Miklat, everyone that's there, they're stuck there. La'olam vod, until the Kohen Gadol drops dead. So they're all davening for that to happen. Please, Ribbono Shel Olam, great man, Tzaddik Olam, please take care of him. I want to go home. So the mother of the Kohen Gadol brings him cookies and cake and food packages. So that way all the people, all the rotzchim in the Ir Miklat will say, oh, what a nice man, I can't daven for his demise. I'll let him live. So the Gemara says, what did he do wrong that the whole world is praying for his death? What did this man do that he was zochet for such a great job? And the Gemara says a fascinating thing. There's some tefillah in the Machzorim on Yom Kippur called the Avoda. The Avoda, I found that Chazanim get a remarkable talent called speed reading. Now, I was thrown into the Chazanist world by force when Rav Cooperman, Shlita, and BMT in Gross, so when he no longer could do the davening in Gross, so he forced me to take his position. So I said no, and the Rosh Hashiva of BMT said I had to, so I told Rav Miller no, and Rav Miller forced me and said I had to, so I got forced into it. And nobody ever taught me that trick of how when you become a chazan, all of a sudden you don't say the words, or you get a discount, or you actually can't say the words. I never figured it out. So it goes pretty slow here to get from beginning to end, to get all the way through the avoda. But until I became chazan, I had actually never seen the whole thing. I never in my lifetime had seen the entire thing until I became chazan. And it's very possible that all you guys go to slow davening places, but I never had that tzuchus, and it was always a rush, and I got 2-3 pages in, but never all the way to the end. It seemed forever, and I never got the very end. If you're ever in this predicament where you're in one of those shuls with gifted chazanim and they make it to the end and you did not get there yet, I highly recommend, do yourselves a favor, skip all the middle and quickly jump to the end. There's a Yehi Ratzon that the Kohen Gadol would say when he comes out of the Kodesh Kadashim. And this, actually, while he's in there, this was his tefillah to the Ribbono Shel Olam right before Mare Kohen. Yehi Ratzon, Kodesh Baruch Hu, there shouldn't be poverty, there shouldn't be barren women, there shouldn't be accidents. There shouldn't be deaths. There shouldn't be ills in society. There shouldn't be... It's a whole paragraph of what there shouldn't be. It is the most beautiful tefillah. The Kohen Gadol takes responsibility for everybody. Every single person. I don't know these people. I'm taking responsibility. They're my people. The Gemara in Makos says, why is it the Kohen Gadol is in this position that everybody's davening for his demise? The answer is because he did not daven for them. Had he davened for them? What do you mean I didn't daven for you? You killed by accident. I didn't daven for what? That you shouldn't kill me? Yes! Yes! You didn't daven that enough for people to care about each other enough? You didn't care to daven to the ultimate amount, the ultimate capability of a Kohen Gadol, that there shouldn't be deaths by accident? There shouldn't be any ills to the society. Nothing. What do we see? Basically, if you don't care, so the Ribbono Shel Olam views it as a big problem. That's not one of the options. I just don't care. Very, very possible to suggest a city is a little bit different than one may have thought. A city is a fortified area that is your protection and not the land. To not reside in a city is a concept that suggests you lay on the land. You stretch out, you enjoy the fat of the land. It's my land, it's my property. If this is true, try to understand the concept of the ghetto walls, or the shtetl walls falling, collapsing in the 1700s, where people voluntarily tore them down. We don't want to live in a closed society of Jewishness anymore. We want an open land. We want to live in the world. That's not your land. It's not your land. Europe. Canada. America. That's where you spread out. Let me enjoy. Sprawl out. This is my land. I'm home. That's not your land. In Eretz Yisrael, you take land. Land is yours. You work the land. It's your land. You develop the land. It's our land. You spread out. Develop every centimeter of this land. Those that are not part of the land don't develop the land, aren't responsible for the development of the land. So they have cities. So the Levium have cities. The city is what fortifies you. That's your protection. You don't have a problem. You don't have an obligation to develop or cultivate the land. You're removed from the land. For the Levium, it was a plus. For the Levium, it's because of an obligation, a duty to go and serve Am Yisrael. Nesunim, Nesunim, Yehem El Hashem. They're devoted entirely to their Baruch Shalom. For everybody else, the people that killed by accident, they're thrown off the land. How do you send the guy out? He's a murderer. He doesn't care about his fellow Jews enough. So what do you do with them? You can't throw them out of Eretz Yisrael. Like you send them to deport them to another country. They're Jews. They're Yidden. So they stay in Eretz Yisrael, but they no longer are connected to the land. The land can't deal with you. There's blood here, and it's in the land, and the land will get its revenge. There are two problems that Moshe Rabbeinu has with B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad. Problem number one is you don't care about your fellow Jew. He's fighting and you're not. And then there's an additional level. The additional level is something called Am Yisrael. You don't care not just about your fellow Jews. That Jew is fighting and you are not, and it's selfish. How could you not be involved in his issues? But yet there's another level. Am Yisrael will not move on. The nation will not pick up and move. What I'd like to suggest is that there are actually two levels of concern. And it goes exactly in that order. Number one is concern for one another. And number two is concern for Am Yisrael. I was in America at a chasana 2 weeks ago. And one of the Talmidim said he heard a beautiful Moser Shmuz from someone right after the flotilla issue. And his Rebbe said, a superficial person would talk about the news and the nations and what this one's saying and what that one's saying. And he said, but an ish panimi, a person that has Musar in his world, in his life, what would he say? He'd say, I have to learn more, I have to daven more, I have to do the avodas Hashem more. So I said to him, that's a great, great Musar shmuz. I want to add one question. One additional question. Ish panimi, avada, you have to work on that. There's one more. What would the ish klali say? A man who cares about Am Yisrael. So what do you mean? Never thought of the question. Had no idea even what I was asking. So we spent a few minutes explaining what it means to care about all of Am Yisrael. We care about the Beis HaMikdash. We care about Geula. We care about Yerushalayim, B'mher B'Yameinu. What is that? It's not for a single Jew. So many of us, if we stop to think for one moment, we all want Mashiach. We want Mashiach now. We were all trained with that song as little youngsters. Why do we want Mashiach? Why? So many of us are trained. I'll tell you why. Because I'm going to have better Torah. I'm going to have better tefillah. I was told I'll have better parnasa. That's always good. I was told that the masecha, the break, the blockade that is between Am Yisrael and Ribbono Shel Olam will be broken, and we'll have a much clearer connection and relationship. This is all my connection. My connection. You could view it on a klali level. What about the Kvod HaShechina? The Kvod of Yerushalayim? The Kvod of Am Yisrael? Yeah. The whole world will be learning Torah? The whole world will be getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's a klali level. There are two levels that I think are laid out by Moshe Rabbeinu to B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. Number one is we have to care about one another, and that's where it begins. And I'll end with a story. I know I'm over time. Please forgive me. Another 30 seconds. An amazing, amazing story with Tisha B'Av coming near. A man was not capable of supporting his children. And he had two sons, Yaakov and Binyamin. I heard this story from Rabbi Krohn. An amazing story. I could cry over and over again about this story. And Yaakov, he got bar mitzvah, hit bar mitzvah, and the man said, you have to go. You have to go and make parnasa on your own. I can't afford you. So he said, okay. Yaakov went out, and he was very successful. Became ultimately a tremendous businessman. He owned a skyscraper, and he was on the top floor. It was great. The next son, Binyamin, he told him the same thing. I don't have money to support you. Go ahead, get some business. So he goes ahead, and he tried. Lo yutzlach. It was not matzliach in anything. Over and over again, he failed. Wait a minute, I've got a brother, Yaakov, he's such a success. I'll go to him, I'm sure he'll give me a job. He goes to his brother's skyscraper, he goes to the top suite, he goes into the office, and he says, Yaakov, it's me, Binyamin, I'm here to get a job. He said, get out of this office, you don't leave right now, I'm going to call the police. So disturbed, I don't understand, what's going on? You are my brother, Yaakov, right? He leaves, he's so depressed. His father fell ill. He sent two letters, one to Yaakov, one to Binyamin. Please come quick. Come to my bedside. Binyamin was sitting there talking to the father and talking and talking, and all of a sudden Yaakov walks in, and the father paid no attention to Yaakov. Yaakov goes to the other side of the bed. He sits there and he's getting quite disturbed. Hey, you're not talking to me. I'm also your son. So the father looks at him and says, this is my son Binyamin. And if he's not your brother, then you cannot possibly be my son. We have to have major concern for for every single Yid. Every single Jew is our responsibility. It's not somebody else's. Every Jew is every Jew's responsibility. Parnasa, Shiduchim, davening for them, and Am Yisrael is also our responsibility.
The first available time.
Before I begin, two things. One, my daughter may be interrupting us every once in a while. Please forgive me for that. Secondly, my heart's a little troubled right now. We saw together in the entrance to the yeshiva on the board. Rav Amital passed away. Rav Amital is the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion Gush, and his levayas today at 11. And I just thought maybe just a word or two about Rav Amital. I went to Gush post-Smicha for 2 years. I studied there, and I was there working as a madrich. And the mif'al, the operation that he created, is something that has really inspired the whole world. There are many different ashkafas in the world of the religious Zionist world. Rav Amital was able to do something that was really quite incredible. A Holocaust survivor, I think part of his drive to really change the world was to see a world destroyed. And him coming to Eretz Yisrael after the Holocaust and really building himself up and building up a whole yeshiva and a community and really influencing all of Klal Yisrael was a reaction to that. He was a big Talmud Chacham, but more than the Torah that he knew and imparted to his students, was the hashkafa. It was very normal, very down to earth, very practical. This is the Torah that he was teaching, that he taught a whole generation of students. He was very real. You know, surviving the Holocaust was a very difficult thing. On one hand, emunah itana, a solid emunah in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and on the other hand, very humble, knowing to say, I don't understand. I don't know. I can't give you any simple answers to the Holocaust, to what happened. And that dual nature, the on one hand, is very rooted in Munna and Kadosh Baruch Hu, on the other hand, a sense of humility, knowing how limited we are in understanding things, I think he brought with him to his understanding of the complexity of Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, the issues at hand, how on one hand, the greatest gift that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was given to Klal Yisrael, and on the other hand, not being blind to its deficiencies and to the fact that Medinat Yisrael is a very complex place, problematic executive board in Medinat Yisrael, and he was able to give over a deep approach to understanding that complexity, which on one hand we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for being here, on the other hand understand what the issues are and work towards fixing them and making this a more ideal place to live. Just one anecdote. Rav Lichtenstein, you all know, Rav Lichtenstein is officially the Rosh Kol of Gruss for decades now, and he's the Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva Har Etzion. He was brought in